Welcome to the second snack program in our series on viral hepatitis. This activity is supported by an independent educational grant from Gilead Sciences, Incorporated. After completing this activity, learners should be better able to incorporate collaborative strategies into practice to improve linkage to care and patient engagement for patients with HBV, HCV, and HDV. Please note this program was recorded prior to the November 2025 liver meeting held in Washington, D.C. Our international faculty includes experts in viral hepatitis prevention and management from Asia, France, Germany, Spain, and the United States.
My name is Dr. Sue Wong, and I'm the medical director for viral hepatitis programs and the Center for Asian Health at Cooperman Barnabas Medical Center, which is in New Jersey, USA.
I'm George. I'm George Lau. I graduated from the University of Hong Kong in 1987. I have been working as a hepatologist for more than 30 years, and I also work in China. I'm a chair professor in Beijing and also Shanghai, and I operate my private clinical trial center now in Hong Kong, and working on advancements of drug discoveries and so on in liver diseases. And in addition, so in the past few years, we set up the APASO Viral Elimination Task Force, and I was elected as the chairman, and right now I'm working on the guidelines for APASO, chronic hepatitis B, with a lot of friends in Asia Pacific regions, more than 48 members from 26 countries or special administrative regions.
My name is Heiner Wedemeyer. I have the privilege to chair the Department of Gastroenterology, Hepatology, Infectious Diseases, and Endocrinology here at Hanover Medical School in Germany. And at this center, we had a long interest in liver diseases, but in particular in viral hepatitis.
My name is Jean-Michel Pavlotsky. I'm a hepatologist by training. I became a virologist by profession and doing both jobs together as well as I could. Currently, I'm the head of the Department of Biology and Pathology in the Henri Mondor University Hospital, which is one of the major university hospitals in the Paris area. And I'm also head of a research unit related to INSERM, our National Institute for Health. And the title of our research unit is Viruses, Hepatology, Cancer. So we're right in the right topic.
I am Maria Butiar. I am an hepatologist based in Barcelona, in Spain, in Hospital Universitario Vallebrón. And I have been working in the field of viral hepatitis for many, many years, particularly in screening, diagnosis, linkage to care, and treatment for hepatitis B, C, and Delta.
My name is Debica Bhattacharya. I'm a physician scientist who does infectious diseases, and I'm based here at UCLA in the great state of California in the United States. And my work is largely around directing a viral hepatitis program in a large integrated healthcare system. And then my research is focused on HIV and viral hepatitis co-infection, primarily HIV and Hep B co-infection, and with a focus on pregnancy and outcomes within pregnancy. However, we do a lot of hepatitis C screening, linkage to care, and treatment in our setting, and I'm really excited to be able to talk to you all about it today.
Here now are Dr. Sue Wong and Dr. George Lau.
You have in Hong Kong or in the region, are there some collaborative care models, or are you seeing this integrated into primary care, or especially like in area like rural areas, right? How do we think we're going to be able to get Hep B care to areas that don't have, you know, big academic centers? You know, what kind of collaboration can we do with primary care or like nurses or, you know, the barefoot doctors, right, that we hear about in China?
That's not exist anymore. No? That was a long time ago. That's before the Cultural Revolution. Now,
or like community healthcare workers, right? There are people who go out to the communities. Yeah, really rural areas.
We have programs from different places. Say, for instance, recently in the southern part of China, that's the Guangdong, that's includes the area with the population about 150 million. And the government, the local government, support universal screening, and we aim at 70% of the populations with hepatitis B and hepatitis C, and it is ongoing. Because screening itself is so cheap.
And, so they're screening both Hep B and Hep C together?
That's right. That's right. They are screening.
Okay, great.
So it's ongoing, and let's see how it goes. But as far as the guideline is concerned, we recommend universal screening. It's not too difficult. Even if
are you guys doing rapid? Is there rapid testing or RDTs?
We do rapid tests. I'm involved in the community healthcare. I have a group called Hepatitis Regeneration, which has been operating for 20 years, and. We have donors, and we run community screening, OH home screening from time to time. It's a quick test. And I have to say that the quick test itself, the cost has come down so drastically. A quick test, because at that time I had to purchase from a company from Australia, it costs about $15 per test, quick test, one drop of blood. And now we are talking about less than 5% of the original cost. It's much, very, very low. And you can also test for others too. It's not just antigen, it's a panel. So
yeah, I think that's where we're moving to, this multiplex testing, right? Where we could be nice to do HIV, Hep B, Hep C all together, right?
HIV, surface antigen, core antibody, anti-HBs, and also hepatitis C antibody. So that's good. It's one drop of blood, and then you can move on with the information. It's not 100% accurate, but I think it's good enough, more than 95%.
Right. Then you can have more community-based testing. We can even talk about potentially self-testing.
And we also go with the measuring of the blood pressure and so on.
That's nice. Right. I think that's the way to do it. Integrate it with other health things. Don't silo it as just hepatitis test.
Weight, you know. Your height and that's your body mass index, and maybe your sugar.
Do your BMI, right.
And to do the sugar too, random.
Definitely
sugar.
The blood sugar. There's also cholesterol finger sticks too. So that's the way to do it. Yeah, it's a whole person approach as opposed to
The liver, the fat
it's
liver.
It's liver, right? It's liver testing too, right?
All of it. Blood pressure. You see, is the whole package.
Yeah.
So that's. I think this is the way to move, and we want to really bring down the liver problems in Asia Pacific regions. I think this is the way to go, especially in China and in India. And they have obesity and so on.
It's a lot of metabolic issues, in Asia, right? So yeah, diabetes, hypertension, hyperlipidemia, right? It all affects the liver.
Right, exactly.
And now let's join Dr. Vedemeyer and Dr. Bhattacharya to learn more about screening and linkage to care.
I think that's. Very interesting, as you mentioned, these GPs, they have to follow so many guidelines, so many recommendations on 20, 30, 40, 50 diseases. We have to educate them, but also have to make things simple.
Yeah.
Not to make things too complicated, and then we miss people. And this respect, you just mentioned that they need reminders, they need electronic support, but also on our side. So what strategies do you think may be effective in your settings in, let's say, shortening the time after screening, after the diagnosis of an infection has been made, and then treatment initiation? And again, in my setting, in our setting, when I look here at my referring physicians, we lose individuals and time matters. The longer it takes, the higher is the risk that in the end we lose an individual. Same for you?
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, in the U.S., unfortunately, we also have a very fragmented healthcare system, right? So you can receive care. So care depends, when you're an adult, on your insurance. And you can get care in community-based clinics. You can get care at large academic healthcare settings. You can get care in a county or a state setting. You can get care in the VA, the Veterans Affairs setting. You can get care in a tribal setting. It's really quite fragmented. And I think the largest barrier, I will just say, is insurance and lack of insurance in order to get care. But I think anything that you can do to co-locate services where people are getting their screening, you know, for other comorbidities is going to increase or decrease time to initiation. So, for example, co-locating HCV treatment and HCV screening and treatment in opioid use disorder clinic has been shown to be successful in increasing SVR rates for sure when compared to standard of care. There was a cluster randomized study that was done in New York in opioid use disorder clinics where they actually also not just co-located care, but they co-located telemedicine, telehealth care for HCV screening and linkage to care. And their SVR rates in the centers that were randomized to telemedicine was over 80%, whereas those who did standard of care was under 50%. And I think that is attributable to, you know, the attention to care that comes with telemedicine. But I would say co-locating care is probably one model. The other model is that we really need to expand and be innovative about how we link people to care. So one of the things that we do in our practice is, two things. We have pharmacists who, by and large, handle most of our hepatitis C care. They're mid-level providers, advanced practice providers. They receive the same consults that we do. And in one pathway, not all of our treatment pathways, but in one of our treatment pathways in uncomplicated patients, those who do not have cirrhosis, those who do not have HIV, they can go to what we call an e-consult direct to treatment program, which means that a pharmacist will review their record, will then, that obviously is discussed or signed off on by a physician. And then that person will then get hepatitis C medications in this day and age, post-pandemic, mailed to them, and then they start treatment. And we have found that that certainly decreases time to initiation. So there we're exploring two concepts there, right? One is expansion of providers using pharmacists. And we're also using a way that we bypass the physical visit only where it's appropriate. Obviously, that's not appropriate for everyone. Yeah. There are people that absolutely need to be seen. But for uncomplicated individuals, you know, very low FIB4s, treatment naives, that has been an approach that we've used.
That's extremely interesting. And this shows to me that there is, in the end, no, let's say, one strategy fits all scenarios. We really have to adapt this on the background of the patient, on the, as you mentioned, on the insurance system, on other settings. But the next question from my side would be, do you consider or do you experience also cultural barriers? So there may be a difference if a patient is, you mentioned the persons who inject drugs, they have to be treated in a different way, as if there may be a migrational background. You can assume that in California, you have, in particular for hepatitis B, you have Asian-born patients, but you may also have completely different, let's say, types of backgrounds, which at least in my setting, when I see in Germany, I have migrants who were born in either Eastern Mediterranean area or in Russia or in Africa. And let's say education, willingness to become tested, willingness to receive treatment is really different. And we need different types of information. We need different types of, let's say, talking to patients.
That's really interesting. You know, one point that I really love that you've brought this up, Heiner, because I think this really highlights, I'm just going to put a plug in for research, of course, but I think this really highlights the need to really do behavioral sciences research, right? Where we understand what the patient's perspective is, because if we can't get folks to take medicine, then, you know, the
what is the use of developing, you know, all of these great products that we have? So I just wanted to put a plug in for that. Yeah, you know, I think that's really interesting. For us, I think that in California, so hepatitis C and hepatitis B. In hepatitis B, it is true that those who are foreign born have a higher prevalence of hepatitis B in the state of California. Largely, I would say in my practice, large academic healthcare setting, most individuals are actually highly educated. They are coming as, you know, postdocs, working in the technology sector, and they're quite cognizant of the need to be screened. I think what becomes an interesting conversation is around treatment and the need for treatment in hepatitis B in particular. I think, you know, in the HIV community, obviously HIV is a different disease. Outcomes happened more quickly. You know, you must treat. But I think we have not seen the same amount of awareness like we did for HIV for hepatitis B, for example. And so kind of this acknowledgement that this is a chronic disease, it's a disease that at some point is likely going to need to be treated they are not able to clear surface antigen by themselves. I think that is a new concept that really bears, you know, discussing. And treatment paradigms are evolving. And so not everybody has heard about, you know, expanded treatment for hepatitis B. And there is some reluctance, I will say, for people to get treated for hepatitis B. And I don't know if that's cultural. I don't have that knowledge to say that it's cultural or not. But I have noticed that I was surprised, actually, as I started talking more and more about expanded treatment for hepatitis B, that I was meeting more resistance to chronic therapy than I thought. So that's the hepatitis B sphere. The hepatitis C sphere, I would say, you know, culturally, in terms of different countries, different regions, that is, it's a lot more homogeneous for us for hepatitis C. But we do have persons who are homeless. We do have persons who are injecting drugs. We do have in the HIV community, men who have sex with men. So there are different ways to talk to. I do find that you have to use different techniques to discuss hepatitis C treatment there, because everybody has different concerns. You know, for somebody who's experiencing homelessness, their biggest concern is, where am I going to put the pill bottle, right? And so then kind of thinking about what strategies you can use to alleviate that. For somebody who is, you know, somebody who is injecting drugs, it's, you know, trying to understand, is this the person who is injecting drugs, but who is otherwise compliant with everything else, and we can actually, you know, put on therapy, versus somebody else who has a lot of other competing comorbidities. And so I think those are the questions really that we that we're dealing with in terms of cultural differences.
It's very, very interesting, Debica. You mentioned the fear of becoming infected, of being infected, maybe different from B versus C, but let's say also stigma of being infected. Do people or infected individuals talk about their infection? Do they feel a stigma? And we've been talking about hepatitis B that we may treat not in distinct settings, but we may not necessarily treat, let's say, the gray zone patients. But I just said this morning, hepatitis B patient, intermediate viral load, not really a high FibroScan. And I said, okay, according to the new European guidelines, you are in a gray zone, we may not treat you immediately. But he was really fighting. He said, okay, I feel being stigmatized with this infection. I have problems, sexual life, in family, the risk of maybe the slightly remaining risk of transmitting the virus. I want you to treat me now, even though the guidelines may say it's no immediate need to initiate treatment. Do you experience the same types of individuals? So is stigma an issue, or do we are making up stigma as one important thing, which in the end for the individual patient is not that important?
Well, again, I think it's patient-centered, right? So it is what each individual patient, I think, is going to have a different answer to that. I do think stigma in hepatitis B is significant, in part because in some parts of the world, it is a test that, you know, may restrict their employment opportunities, you know, particularly in healthcare. And yeah. So I think that it becomes important. And then around childbearing age for a couple, I think that's where I've seen stigma be most apparent. You know what I find interesting, though, is that when I start talking about the hepatitis B treatment question, I do get asked, you know, well, so you tell me that the viral load is going to go down, but what about the other marker, the hepatitis B surface antigen? You're telling me that that's going to remain positive, probably, you know, still forever with current therapies, or 1% a year loss. And that actually has an impact on them, you know, that I find surprising. And I think that if we had treatments where we can actually get to functional cures, you know, and I know you're doing a lot of the research, that there are many drugs in development right now that are aiming for hepatitis B functional cure, where you can hopefully lose, the goal is to lose hepatitis B surface antigen. I think that we are underestimating how important that might be to patients because of the stigma of having hepatitis B surface antigenemia. But I do think it varies from person to person, and I think it varies based on the context of their lives.
Yeah.
Next, Dr. Wong and Dr. Budi explore access to screening and treatment in Spain.
We have a national elimination plan for hepatitis C. This national elimination plan allow a screening for everybody that likes to be or wants to be screened, and also access to treatment, free access to treatment diagnosis and treatment. And I think this is very, very good because we have treated and we have cured a large number of patients with chronic hepatitis C. It's not the same for hepatitis B. It's a pity because this national plan, it's only focused on hepatitis C. It will be nice to cover both hepatitis C and B. But we have a good vaccination program. All newborns are vaccinated, and also adolescents. And I can tell you that our population, the Spanish population, or people who were born in Spain, are all vaccinated against hepatitis B at ages below 40.
Before 40, so you do it for adults. You have an adult vaccination policy along with a pediatric one?
We have, but for people with risk factors. But we have this general vaccination pediatric program for more than 40 years. That means that an important part of our population have been vaccinated against hepatitis B. Mm-hmm. We have the issue of migrants, particularly for high and middle endemic countries for hepatitis B are not vaccinated, or some of them are not vaccinated, but our local population is vaccinated because the acceptance of vaccination is very, very high.
Great to hear. No, it's really interesting to hear the differences in countries with acceptability of vaccines. And obviously you have a big migrant population too, right? So that probably plays into some of the, where the burden is of Hep B, right?
Yeah, we have an important migrant population, particularly from South America, because we speak the same language. So it's this type of migration. But South America, it's not a region with a high endemicity for hepatitis B. But we have an important migration from sub-Saharan Africa. Mm-hmm. And in sub-Saharan Africa, the endemicity of hepatitis B, and in some parts also of hepatitis Delta, is very high. So this is an issue now. Some of these are illegal migrants with different languages, with barriers to access to our healthcare system. And the majority of migrants from these African countries are not vaccinated.
Yeah, yeah. No, you guys have done great work in that population, I know.
And now, here again is Dr. Wedemeyer for a frank and candid discussion with Dr. Polotsky on linkage to care in France and Germany.
When we talk about simplifying regimens, everything starts with screening. We can only cure a disease, we can treat an infection only if the infection has been identified. And there has been a lot of discussions, population-based universal screening, cost-effectiveness of screening approaches, differently for B, for C, and even for Delta with reflex testing. What are your thoughts on potential approaches, how to screen the populations? For example, for France, would there be a difference for high-risk populations versus general populations? What are your thoughts?
Before we continue, let's get our audience involved with an audience response question. Which of the following strategies is most effective in improving viral hepatitis case finding and linkage to care in France? Is it A, implementing universal, population-wide HBV and HCV screening as the primary national approach? B, relying on general practitioners to lead most viral hepatitis and treatment efforts? C, integrating combined HBV, HCV, and HDV testing and reflex testing into existing high-risk service settings, or D, focusing exclusively on point-of-care testing and dried blood spots without additional system-level changes, or select E if you're not sure. And the correct answer is C, integrating combined HBV, HCV, HDV, and reflex testing into existing high-risk service settings. Let's return now to Dr. Wedemeyer and Dr. Polotsky.
So I can tell you what worked in France in terms of diagnosis and linkage to care. Universal screening did not really work, and I think after recommending it, the French government is stepping back. What clearly worked is combined testing HBV, HCV, HIV at the same time is what in one offer for people who come for either virus or for another reason is something which worked pretty well. Reflex testing you alluded to is very important. When you have an HBsAg positive sample, you reflex test for HBV DNA. You reflex test for HBV RNA when you're anti-HBV positive, and you reflex test for HDV antibodies when you're HBsAg positive. Point of care tests and dried blood spots have been very helpful in certain settings. And most importantly, integration of screening and diagnosis into existing services which are used by high-risk groups is something that is very helpful. Opioid substitution clinics, needle syringe programs, sexual health clinics, migrant centers, HIV clinics, prisons, detention centers, obviously. I think one point is community outreach and culturally adapted campaigns also, because there are marginalized groups with different cultures, different languages. Decentralizing testing is important, involving non-specialists from the primary care physicians, nurses, etc. All this, I think, has been working in France, and we have screened and detected many, many patients. Patients are remaining undiagnosed, especially in these high-risk or vulnerable or excluded populations. And I think by continuing integrating all these different approaches, we can really make progress. So it is possible, but we have not achieved it. I think The main barriers currently that limit expansion is the incomplete reflex testing, issues in prison implementation, the issue also of HDV, which is not well known by people and often forgotten, and also some data gaps and social structural barriers. And we have a lot of new patients who are migrants coming from various parts of the world. The language, but also the culture. It's easy to resolve the problem of the language, you just need an interpreter. But the culture of the people may be important in the way they take diagnosis, treatment, etc. And we have to take care of this. It's a major barrier, I believe.
And in France, you mentioned all the different groups, cultural barriers, but also the guys taking care about the syringe change problems, programs. In all settings, these people involved in taking care about human beings, individuals, are really aware of the importance of viral hepatitis. My impression is that, let's say, 5-10 years ago, there was more noise in this field, that some of these people being involved in these systems are less aware about the issue of viral hepatitis than it had been 5-10 years ago.
I completely agree. I completely agree. It's probably partly our fault. Because when you say we've solved the hepatitis C, we've solved hepatitis C repeatedly, and we're happy that we had options, we had simplified treatment, we had very high cure rates, nobody is interested anymore, including our young colleagues who are not interested in treating patients with hepatitis C because they think it's no longer a problem, it's been solved, etc. There's also, I think, some misunderstanding around HBV drug development, HBV cure, which was announced, which is not possible, and we're evolving in different directions with different potential drugs. And Delta is really ignored very globally. And I remember when I was a medical student, we knew that Delta was with HBV. We knew that we had to reflex test for Delta virus. And at some point, and for any reason, I think it's been forgotten by doctors. And there's a lot of work to do to bring it back into their thoughts. So yes, I completely agree. I think hepatitis is no longer popular. Although we have a vaccine for HBV and HDV, although we have good treatments for the three viruses now, we have to probably revive it.
Yeah. And then therefore, I think also programs like this are important. We have to keep going. Just one remark, I was regarding my country, Germany. I was really surprised. Obviously, we were all focused on risk-based screening procedures targeting all the group you just described. You know that in Germany, there has been some kind of population-based, not screening, but offer of testing being introduced in fall 2021, that every German individual above the age of 35 could attend a general health checkup, undergo screening for viral hepatitis once. And initially, I was really skeptical because who is attending this general health checkup? It's not the risk groups. It's not the guys with the language barriers, etc. And I was skeptical whether this would really work. But it worked. We had a dramatic increase in newly identified cases, both of for hepatitis B as well as for hepatitis C. The newly diagnosed rates for HBV in this group were 5 times as high in 2022 as compared to pre-pandemic areas 2019, which showed to me that there's really many patients undiagnosed out there, and it's almost an ethical responsibility to identify individuals as risks who may suffer from a disease but who also may transmit an infection. Population-based efforts, I think now should be implemented throughout Europe, in my view.
Yeah, I agree with that, with one point, which is that Europe, anyway, is heterogeneous in terms of infected populations. Obviously, we have high-risk populations in common, people who inject drugs, prisoners, these ones we have everywhere. But I think a point that plays a role is that the different forms of immigration we have in different countries. We do not have the same people coming from the same countries with the same risk factors. And this has to be taken into consideration. I completely agree with you that there are some parts of the global population that are accessible by screening campaigns like the one you mentioned, and we had the same recommendation in France. I'm not sure we were as successful as you were, but we were somewhat successful. But then in every country, we have to understand where are the pockets of HCV, HBV, HDV infected patients that remain and that we should specifically target. And this is part of public health, actually.
Who is treating viral hepatitis in France? Is it the GPs? Is it the infectious disease specialists? Is it the hepatologist? Who's taking care about these patients? And the usual topic, linkage to care, linkage to treatment. So where are the patients lost in France?
So in theory, everybody can prescribe viral hepatitis drugs, including general practitioners. This is in theory, but in practice, and that was mostly the case for hepatitis C, because hepatitis B, I think they partly manage, but we thought that they would be really interested in treating hepatitis C, and they are not. So the vast majority of patients in France, it may be different in Germany, you'll tell me, and in other countries, but in France, the vast majority of patients are still taken care of and treated in a specialist pathway, which can be either hepatologists or infectious disease physicians. There are a few general practitioners who prescribe, but they have become specialists, in fact. So they are liver general practitioners. They have patients. And so it's this, in my opinion, has been a little bit disappointing. That said, it's not been a problem in our elimination program. I mean, we keep the target and we are really on track. So it's not been something blocking for the elimination targets, but it's been a surprise for all of us because we have been advertising GPs taking care of these patients and they have not been interested in. To their credit, they have a lot of diseases to take care of, and yeah. Hepatitis is one among many, and obviously they are probably more interested in hypertension, diabetes, and very frequent diseases than in viral hepatitis.
Yeah, I in my country, I completely agree with your last point. The GPs have to take care about so many issues, so many diseases. They have to know 100 guidelines. Mm-hmm. And viral hepatitis is not their main problem. And that leads me to the main point, because a patient with viral hepatitis needs time.
Yeah.
They need to explain the disease. And obviously, if you have to teach students or young fellows these days, important point is patient engagement and shared decision-making. You have to involve your patient. And I think for the GPs, if you really want to involve your patient, you need knowledge and expertise also in the details. And that's probably our jobs, the experts, to explain the importance of a viral hepatitis or an infection and with all the consequences behind that. I don't know, at least for me in Germany, this is really an issue. And patients who are infected with the hepatitis virus, they have questions.
Here are our SMART goals for today. 1, implement combined testing within routine workflows, adopting at least one integrated screening approach. 2, reduce time from diagnosis to treatment by adopting models such as co-located services, telemedicine, or pharmacist-led pathways. And 3, increase collaboration with primary care, pharmacists, and community health workers. Please also visit the Liver Hub at cmeoutfitters.com for more educational activities and resources for clinicians and patients. To receive credit for today's activity, please complete the post-test and evaluation. And don't forget to check out the other snacks in this series. Thank you, and have a nice day.